This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Good to have you here. Oh, my. Always want to thank my listener for sharing our episodes, hanging out with us. Your patronage via listening and or watching on our YouTube channel is so appreciated. It helps us continue to be a driving force in helping to advance the aftermarket. Good to have you here. The National Training Manager from Napa Tracks. Woo! Good to have you, man.
Good to be here.
Great sponsor, great company. And I found out all about your legacy while we were at Vision. This guy's been around the horn just a little bit. Service advisor, manager, you sold tires. Give us a few minutes on the great work you've done in the industry.
Absolutely. The industry started for me as a service counter service writer at a tire operation. That would be the NTW stores out in Atlanta. I quickly moved through that environment to the point where I was looking for more. I switched up to a full service garage. That was about 25 years ago now. So it's dating me a little bit, but I worked up from a service writer role. Again, I had that tire selling experience, but the full service garage portion of it was all new to me. So I had to educate myself and grow within the industry. So for approximately 15 years, I grew with an automotive shop that went from a single location to multiple, all the while using a software called Napa Tracks. The industry for me changed just a little bit, just over 10 years ago when I joined the Tracks team. I'm based out of Florida, so I took on that local market at first and then worked my way up to national training manager. So I get to do what I love and I get to share information with shops from coast to coast. You know, if you've ever asked yourself, I wonder what works down the street or what shops are doing in different areas. I've had the pleasure of going into hundreds, if not thousands of shops and ask questions and see how they do it.
Remember, if you earn your living in the service aftermarket, then Apex is the expo for you. Continue listening and we'll bring you the latest from Apex 2024. Save the date, November 5th through the 7th, 2024. Hey, let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop. And Napa Tracks will move your shop into the SMS fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Find Napa Tracks on the web at napatracs.com. Also, thanks to aftermarketmanagementnetwork.com for information that can help you move your business ahead and for the free and informative laborratetracker.com. You know, Ben, you bring up such an important thing that I think the industry needs to hear, and that is you, service advisor, selling tires, managed a multi-shop operation, and now you're the national training manager for Napa Tracks. I know a vice president of training at a major manufacturing company that started in the bays, and I think this story of where can I go in the industry is so prevalent to you and so many other people that say, you know what? Inside of me somewhere says, I want to do more. I want to be something different, something better. But how can I take my years of industry knowledge, the business acumen that I've learned, and take it to another level, whatever that other level is? You've obviously found yours. The journey, did you ever think you'd be doing what you're doing?
I don't know that I would have thought I would be at the scope that I'm at now. I always knew that I had a desire to succeed. So it probably wouldn't matter what industry I moved myself into professionally, but I always knew that I had a desire for more. There was a drive within me that wasn't typical for the owners that I worked for, so they hung on to me for quite a few years. I had to give folks that didn't have quite that same drive an opportunity to achieve above average results, because that's my goal, or my target was perfection, and the goal was the progress towards that. The industry as a whole is a never-ending opportunity for growth. Cars change, information changes, general public stays somewhat the same, I'll say in that regard. But growing in the industry for me, I wouldn't have thought when I first started, greeting that first customer, writing up that first service ticket, that I would have ended up where I'm at now, which is an opportunity, not just for myself and my company, but to help shop owners and operators across the country. It's a passion of mine.
I have to tell you, my big takeaway from that most recent minute and a half rant was my target was perfection. OMG. You sound like me.
You have something, John.
There's a kind of a, if not a warning call, but a passion call because that's what your target was. And I think that means so much to people who are shop owners or technicians and trainers in our industry that your target was perfection. I love that. We spent some time together, Ben and I, trying to formulate a really cool episode. And you're going to love this episode. There's so much in it. We're going to talk about some other shows that Ben and I are going to do. But one of the things that we were chatting to a facetious kind of a way was when I, you know, you're a training manager, and one of the great things about Trax is that you do this every day for your clients and the industry. I don't think anybody else does what you do. And so I was kind of saying, how do you get people to training? I talk to shop owners and they say, well, my techs won't go to training. And then I say, in a very sarcastic way, who owns the business? And I said to Ben, I says, how did you get your guys to go to training? And you said,
well, if I didn't put myself in their shoes, I don't think I'd have the leadership that I did. So I drove them there. I loaded up the van with the technicians and I participated in the Napa Auto Tech training program. Learned as much as they did, which turned out to be a major asset of mine when dealing with customers at the counter and coordinating with the shop. So we took that from just Ben driving them down there to bringing the entire team, the service writers and the technicians, down to the technical training classes. They questioned me a few times. What are all these service writers doing here? You know, this is a technical training class. And I said, well, if they don't understand exactly what's going on in those bays out there, how is the relationship between the shop, service counter, and the technicians in the bays going to improve? And ultimately, how are we going to have a better presentation to the customer? And that was the beginning of it. We'd bring roughly 20 gentlemen down to the training room every single time they offered it.
So many thoughts going through my mind of what you just said. And I think the big takeaway here is drive the van to training. And to me, it's a metaphor for this is what I need to do. It kind of reminded me of all the people who closed their shop and traveled in cars, in vans, in airplanes to go to Vision just, you know, a month and a half ago. And to be there and let your people see the engagement that you have. And then there's one other thing that recently hit me, Ben, and work with me on this. I was talking to a sales coach the other day and says, do you require the owner or that service advisor's manager to be in the class? And they say, Carm, we worked so hard at making that happen, but a lot of times it doesn't. And then I say, can you imagine the owner spending X to send their people to service advisor school? They come back with all this excitement and new knowledge and technique, and no one's there to hold them accountable for it. Or the owner says, what are you doing? No. I was in class and they told me this. No. We're not changing. We're doing this. Because the owner or the leader, the manager of that individual didn't get the buy-in, didn't get the feel for it. And I think this is a watershed moment, Ben, that if we don't participate,
exactly,
the money you're spending is not going to stick. There's no value in it.
Absolutely. There are far too many examples of the tail wagging the dog in the industry. And like you said before, you know, who's the owner? You know, who's in charge here? And you're exactly right. If the position of leadership is not present at the same time as the folks that you send for the training, so much loss of translation occurs. The four-letter word of change kicks in real quick is what I found out. Service writers and a lot of business owners as a whole, they fear change. They don't want to dive head in, but it's certainly not the four-letter word intermittent. And we deal with that all day long with intermittent car troubles. So it's easy to jump in. And once you get that habit going, it really does pay off. I think you start to see the light. You know, most shop owners that that follow that recommendation end up with a team of people that are highly trained. Now, I do get asked this question, Ben, what if I train this person and I bring their skills up to a high level? What if they leave me? And the question I ask them right back again is, well, what if you don't train them and they stay? How's that going to work out? So
we've been speaking that probably quarterly over the last 9 years to people to hopefully it gets ingrained in them to realize that training is an investment. It is not a cost. But you know, the thing I love about owners going to training, even if they haven't been in the base, actually worked on a vehicle in years, but they're there and they just hang out in the class. Maybe they're taking some notes. Maybe they're doing a little work on the side, but they're inside what's going on. And they maybe hear every 10th word. Just go with me on this. And they come out of that class and they're back at work or they're hanging out with their people and they say, so that was so interesting about that one test that, you know, saved an hour. What did you think of it? Isn't that my role? to challenge their newfound knowledge and to walk away saying, he heard that. That's going to be important to us.
Absolutely. And there's something to add on top of that. The connection that you have between the team members and leadership is so much stronger. You know, it's kind of like a platoon leader leading the GIs into battle. You've got to get in there and get your hands dirty. The further you separate yourself from the business as a business owner, I think you still need to consider having a manager that's as immersed in the program there that can get the information from the supplier or from the vendor, the trainer, and make sure that they keep that as a top point of focus. Because you're exactly right. The question, or really, I also think there's another advantage too. The person that's driving the van, the owner, the shop operator gets to watch the level of engagement with the team members in that training. Now you know where some of your problems or your challenges or areas to work on are with those folks. If you got somebody taking apart an ink pen and it looks like a Manhattan Project on the desk, he's not paying attention to the training. And odds are, I'd be willing to bet if you're using your shop management software to track their performance, that person might have a higher comeback ratio than somebody who's, you know, taking copious notes and engaged with the trainer.
You train all the time. And I know it's not just on, you know, tab A goes into slot B. You're doing so much more than that. Talk to me about your passion about building customer rapport.
The interesting part about customer rapport for me is in the beginning, I was just as shortcut oriented and shoot from the hip as most service writers. And I noticed there was a pattern. The fix-it customer in our industry, that was my target. That was perfection to me. A customer that felt good enough about my interpretation of their needs that they would simply hand me their keys and say, Ben, here's the symptoms. Here's the problem. Here's what I need. Call me when it's done. Don't call me to tell me how much it is. You can call me and tell me how long you need to keep the car, but we don't need to hear the price. Whatever you recommend, we're going to move forward with. And the only way that I could achieve a fix-it style customer base is to build the rapport. And a couple of examples of this would be, I remember the days using a desktop calendar to make appointments. Carm would call in, give me 3 to 5 minutes of information. I'd be going in one ear, out the other, and I'd write down in that tiny little square on that calendar, Carm, check brakes, Honda. And then when Carm comes in at the front counter, guess what? We have to ask him that all over again. And many times over, I'd hear the customers say, well, Ben, I already told you all that on the phone, or so-and-so must not have been listening. It's not a customer rapport building experience if they feel like even an iota of their information is missed. So we took on the monumental effort to make sure that we used our digital scheduler. But not only would I take down everything Carm asked for, I'd give individual recommendations based on that if it warranted at that time. But most importantly, I would restate everything that Carm said to make sure that there was nothing that I missed. And if that doesn't build customer rapport, I don't know what does. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's like the initial conversation. But there's much more to customer rapport building in a shop management system than just what the interaction is initially when you make the appointment.
What about scheduling?
Scheduling is a huge thing. And in our industry, and I think there's a bit of a shift in the paradigm, I think we're getting away from reactive style scheduling. You know, they call in, we say yes to every customer, and we deal with those bottlenecks. Some shops refer to it as the witching hour. First hour of the day, the last hour of the day, we have a line of customers with their head popping to the side, looking to try to make eye contact with you, doing this number, looking at their watch. The reality of scheduling is twofold these days. We have scheduling of the drop-off, which is a coordinated effort. Now, customers, of course, aren't necessarily going to follow that. But it's a coordinated effort to eliminate that stack of customers all arriving at the same time whenever possible. But then we move into an opportunity now to address one of the two biggest problems that I see routinely when I talk to customers in repair shops. The two problems. One, my car was not fixed on time. And the second is my car wasn't fixed right the first time. I think there's a definite relationship between those two things. So if we don't schedule ourselves for success and we don't look at labor inventory, the availability of how much appointment can I take in a day, then scheduling is really just it's like throwing spaghetti at the wall. We'll see which appointments stick and we'll see which customers are okay with a disorganized operation. So last thing I'll say on scheduling, Carm, is a lot of shops don't look at the business as an air pump, and I do. Right? It's a constant flow of keys. I need to be putting out. And for example, what we're looking at is the number of keys coming into the shop and the relationship to the number of keys leaving the shop every day. If I'm taking in multiple sets of keys and only a few sets are going out, I've got a bottleneck in the shop. If I've got more keys leaving the business than I have coming into the business, then I have other opportunities there with advertising and marketing. But the goal would be a solid balance of input and output if we just simply track the keys themselves.
It's brilliant. I mean, I don't think you need a sophisticated piece of software to have eyes to keys.
Your in and out ratio of keys is a great indicator of how well that shop's doing, regardless of the numbers, regardless of the baseline, the depth, or getting to a cellular level analysis of the business. We're just looking at the volume of movement through the business.
It's brilliant stuff. We need to do more on that. We buy a piece of software. We have integrations to many other, you know, if you will, add-ons like DVI, like CRM. The power of those for the business?
It's a commitment perspective to me. So we start out with the shop management software, and if we are utilizing it at a high level, there's opportunities to grow from there. So if the goal is perfection, you know, we can do so much in a shop management software, but what other allies exist? And you brought up DVI, for example. There are far too many operations that are still handwriting 27-point cursory inspection, and they throw it in that ticket pouch. That's good enough for business. Well, if we do the same thing we've always done, we're going to get the same results we've always gotten. The reality of taking that digital leap, which is not as uncommon today as it was 10 or 15 years ago, we have an opportunity to streamline the operation. But most importantly, in the DVI space, we can do something that this industry has struggled with since inception. We sell the invisible every day. There are times where a customer will walk out to their car, open the hood after an engine replacement, and they're scouting around under the hood looking for anything new. The reality is a lot of those parts transfer over to that engine block assembly, so we have to explain that. Or if you have a technician that finds a car backed in a certain parking spot, and then they go back it into the exact same parking spot when they're done, a customer that arrives does ask that question from time to time. Hey, did you guys actually work on my car? What did I buy? Because I don't get to see it. And you talked about the CRM piece of this. These are things that if a shop owner doesn't do a comparison of their available time, they don't see the value in it. So I ask shop owners all the time, take your hourly rate of your shop and multiply that times a true assessment of how much time you spend in-house, licking stamps, mailing postcards, making phone calls, sending text messages, keeping that customer rapport that I referenced at a high level. And you're going to find more times than not, you're spending more effective time doing that than to coordinate with a CRM provider that will do it for you and can do it in a professional manner and do it in bulk. That's a huge opportunity to work on the business rather than be stuck, neck deep working in the business.
If you went to Apex 2023, then you realize the incredible commitment that Apex has to the service professional, shop owner, technician, and service advisor. Joe's Garage is your place to hang out with 10 working bays and real live working conditions. Also, the best tech companies, from tools and repair to management software, had their latest and greatest on display and demonstrated for you. You also attended technical and business management training with the industry's best and brightest trainers, coaches, and teachers. Work is underway to make next year's Apex 2024 have even more product demos, trending training, marketing, and social media support to help you grow your career, sales, and profits. Remember, if you earn your living in the service aftermarket, then Apex is the expo for you. Continue listening, and we'll bring you the latest from Apex 2024. Save the date, November 5th through the 7th, 2024. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. Hey, did you know at automotivemanagementnetwork.com you can find an SOP, a checklist, forms, along with policies and procedures that can help you move your business ahead? Well, sometimes you just need a little motivation to write a policy if only you had something to review and then make your own. You can save so much valuable time when you can grab a document from our library, make a few adjustments for your shop, and move to your next task. There are more than 350 searchable documents, with new documents arriving soon at automotivemanagementnetwork.com. Question to you about DVIs. Someone mentioned to me, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago, why don't we just take some of the young people that are going through college, bring them in as an intern, and let them do our DVIs for us? And I wasn't 100% sure on that, although it could help someone learn processes, procedures, learn a whole lot about systems. And what is your opinion? The mechanical or technology specialists should be the ones, the top people to do the DVIs?
Well, the DVI, I think, is a coordinated effort. It's going to involve both sides of the service counter and the technicians in the bay. Now, we could overimpose one responsibility to one party or the other, but then we lack that continuity, the connection between the two. The technician, in most regards, does not want direct communication with the customer, and for good reason. They're working directly with the vehicle, the inanimate object that can't speak to them. But there's also the service writer's responsibility to take all the communication, all the knowledge they know from the customer, and to be able to transmit that to the technician. And the most effective way possible is DVI. It limits the foot traffic from the bays all the way to the service counter. And in many cases, that not only is there that foot traffic, but the technician just sits there, standing there holding the ticket, tapping their wrench, or just sitting there waiting for the service writer to get off the phone or for them to be done invoicing somebody up front. So the DVI space is not only a foot traffic saver, we're going to have less footsteps per mile, but we're also going to have an accurate record of what is said, what is communicated, and it's in real time. So a technician can be on a test drive and get an update on a DVI, and they can come back to the shop. There it is. They don't have to track it down. So there's so many advantages internally and externally to a DVI. I just can't say enough of the importance, but I will say this. I've walked into far too many shop operations that sign up for DVI and they're using 1/10 of it or nothing at all. They thought they bought an easy button. You have to get in there and utilize that. So if it requires somebody to do the visual inspection and walk around and camera footage the vehicle to help the technician and the service writer, I think that would be a viable option. See how that works out. But the reality is the tool has to be used by somebody, and far too many times it's not. Or very, very limited use.
Ben, I'm working on a show that I want to bring some people together and talk about the fact that we are not utilizing, if I keep thinking of the word usage, of the software that we have to any heightened capability. And I'm curious to find out, is it the lack of training? Is it the fact that I signed up, checked the box, all my buddies have this, so now I do, and they can stop bothering me, but I really don't care? I'm trying to find what is a root cause that we're not scaling up to utilize what we're buying and paying for, or maybe we don't even see the benefit of some of these great tools and features.
Oh, it's a fantastic topic. But great question too, is just like driving the van for training. If we don't have a leader, we don't have a team captain, a coach, we don't have somebody that fully understands the goal. What is the use of this? How am I going to be more productive with it? Because if we're profitable, productivity now becomes the money printing machine, so to speak. So if somebody doesn't have a firm grasp on it in the operation, what we find too many times is that there's not a desire to dig deep. There's not that advantage to move forward. And in my experience, and I hope I don't offend, but in far too many shops, the culture is that the beatings will continue until morale improves. I've tried that. I really have. I've been very, very militant, very hard-nosed. I drove a tight ship for a long time, and then I realized I don't have anybody that feels comfortable getting outside of their normal space to do something different, because you're going to break a few eggs making that omelet. Growth does have its cost. There's some growing pains, if you will. But the reality of having somebody that is driven, that is in the operation, working in the business, we're not talking about an owner that is an absentee owner or somebody that comes in from time to time, spends a few hours in the shop and then goes home, but a leader, that platoon sergeant that's right there neck deep in the muck, somebody who is now moving the needle forward. It's about progress, not perfection. When you're transitioning from handwritten to digital, that's a huge leap. That's a quantum leap for most operations. And there's a struggle there. It's, you know, are we actually making any movement here? And I'm a huge proponent of a test and measure. If we can't see an improvement in selling percentage or an improvement of interaction between the service writer and the technician, then we can work on that. But it comes down to, if you don't want to use the tool, you're not going to get the results.
Test and measure. It sounds like a military term.
Yes. I was taught early on, if we don't test and measure, how do we know what we're doing is helping or hurting the business? And it was perfect. You know, the perception is reality. You know, you've heard that term before, and it's not always wrong, but odds are more times than not, you'd be surprised. Without accurate accountability of whatever part of the business that you're looking at, you run the risk of perceiving that you're making an improvement, and lo and behold, you don't move forward. I use a quick example. In 2009, in June, we ran a report in our shop management software, and to my surprise, I thought, wow, that's an odd number. There were 6 radiator hoses sold in 6 months. I couldn't believe that. You know, I went around the sales room, the service writers, and I asked them, how many did you sell? And how many did you sell? And, you know, we came up with hundreds of hoses, right? That was the perception. The reality is we sold 6 hoses, 6 upper radiator hoses to boot. So that tells me a technician was going to a service writer saying, hey, it's right there. Get me an upper hose. Let's at least do that. July of that very same year, and I'll never forget, we sold 157 radiator hoses that next month. So if we don't utilize the tool, if we don't test and measure our performance, how do we know we're going to make any kind of quantum leaps or major jumps? I'll say that the 157 hoses that we sold, we didn't have one argument at the counter. We didn't have one service writer that was bucking up and saying, hey, I can't do this. We just simply recommended hoses on any car that had 80,000 miles or more and had factory hoses. If we don't ask, then we don't know. And that that test and measure example is just one of many that I've seen in the business.
It reminds me of the term, and I've been saying this a lot lately, MBWA, management by walking around. It came from Tom Peters, and I believe the MBWA thing came from HP back in the 70s. And I've been using that lately to talk about testing the culture inside the business, and how could you ever possibly find out if you weren't out in the bays, at the counter, talking to clients in the offices by managing, by walking around. And to me, the logic that you're talking about is you're out there, you're watching all this work going on, and you see this soft hose, you know, 80,000 mile car, you know, it's going to go one day, you know, the vehicle's going to be on the side of the road. And you're looking at that hose. And as an owner, leader, shop foreman, manager, general, you're saying to yourself, you're probably going to find out if that was offered up to the service advisor to get back to the customer. To me, this is, you go to the shop management system, you click on your parts ordering, bam, it's here in 20 minutes, and you've done something for the customer and not leaving him in the lurch one day. And I think that's one of the bitches that customers have is why I was just there a month and a half ago. Why did this car break down if they were paying attention to my vehicle? If no one told me, okay, yeah, they were right, I'm leaking, but I decided not to buy the hose. It's this toss-up that I think goes on in people's minds to the point you're not trying to oversell, Ben, are you?
No, and there's, you bring up a topic that I encourage shops on more often than not to just think about, not take action, just think about their recommended service program. There's a reason that these billboards in the state of Florida say $70 billion of underperformed and undone maintenance. There's no mystery there for me. When you see shops out there that have service writers, just as you explained, if we're not talking to the customer, if we're not informing them, we do leave ourselves open for a rapport damaging event like, hey, I had a hose blow after I just had my oil changed even a week ago, or a battery that's dead a few days after they brought it in for service. Things that we could have communicated, and all shop management softwares are created equal, in my opinion, in regards to recommended services. They all allow that functionality. Now, there's different levels at certain softwares, but the reality is if the service writer is not keeping the customer informed, if the technician's not keeping the service writer informed, that 360-degree circle's broken. And at one point or another, you're going to run the risk of exactly what you talk about, an unexpected breakdown, a loss of opportunity, and a quick way to get my blood pressure to rise as a shop operator is to have a customer stroll back in the door looking at their invoice and they say, hey, this says I needed front brake pads. Nobody told me that. I would have done those today. Boy, I tell you, we We get told no a lot of times. We spend a lot of time cultivating a recommended service program to find a customer, walk back in the business and inform us that they weren't notified that there were needs. I think that's a shop owner's worst nightmare.
Are we overbooking, which is why I don't want to tell the customer, because if they say yes, then we're going to be behind?
I think a lot of the reality of my experience and going around and watching service writers, not just my own, I had 9 at one time spread out between 2 locations. So, you know, 9 different personality types. There's a lot of patience and tolerance there to cultivate growth. But in most cases, service writers are afraid to ask for the sale. They're afraid of rejection. They're afraid of the additional work. But if we have, again, back to scheduling, if we don't have this constant, like the peaks and the valleys of the industry, right? That's the flow of the day. Service writers that are reactive are going to be less likely to make solid and good decisions when it comes to recommended services. Shops that operate on a smooth level, right? They're looking at key flow. They're looking at appointment drop-offs. They're looking at work in progress. The service advisor has the time to spend with that customer. There are several different classes that we offer during the month. And the last Tuesday of every month, we do a service writer targeted class for maximizing estimation approvals. It's not rocket science. It's very basic, consistent practice. And subliminally, we're telling a customer not to buy from us if we're not consistent with our recommendations. You know, if we say something one time, the customer says no, and then we never communicate after that, we're telling them there's something's wrong. A sale doesn't have to start out with a high pressure Kirby vacuum cleaner sales approach. It can be just as simple as communicating the facts of the vehicle. So in most shop management systems, the recommended services are also offered as a printable on the invoice so that we at least have that visual that goes out to the customer.
Imagine if you were studying all of your data, you were trying to figure out your own personal internal statistics and KPIs, which every great shop operator does. And a vehicle comes in, let's go back to the hose thing. You sold 150 hoses. I'm going to walk down a rat hole here. Here comes the vehicle. We do the inspection, but we know that our average repair order is X. This vehicle came in and you say our ARO is $795, and this vehicle came in for like $500 worth of work. And we know that if we do a really good job and we make this vehicle whole, OE whole, if you will, battery, hose, all of those things based on recommended services or really a bad or failing part, that we may want to slow down a bit and look for the opportunities that exist in what we have every day instead of, you know, just, if you will, burn and churn. And there's so many different philosophies on how to generate, you know, car count and profits and being thorough with average repair order. And in my mind, that's what I'm thinking. Everything that I'm hearing from you, that some of us in the industry could rethink how we analyze our statistics and sit down with our sales team and say, let's talk about this. Let's use the hose as a metaphor of missed opportunity.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Reports. All kinds of reports come out of the system. And I think I'm almost kind of leaning in that direction here, that we see all these great statistics and all these reports and how to make sense of them and how to grow our business.
Absolutely. And I recall several years back as a shop operator, I had morning meetings with the service counter at each location. And we'd talk about where are we at for the month? Where are we projected to go for the month? What challenges do we have? Where are we at sales-wise? And my moral compass points north. That's my opinion of myself. The reality was that if we didn't know how each individual service writer was performing, we didn't have a way to pick each other up, right? We all succeed together or we fail together. There was no mercenary sales tactics at either operation that I was a part of. And the reality was in reporting, we could do sales by service writer and have a composite view of individual performance in relation to the total business. Now, if we have somebody that's overperforming in a certain area, far ahead of their peers, then we have that discussion. It's a constructive discussion, just as well as somebody who's struggling. It's a constructive effort, not a battle axe, you know, reports used as a weapon. And that's very common, unfortunately. Accountability, hey, says right here, you screwed up, or your average ticket is subpar, you know, you've got to go type of a mentality. The reality is if we can compare our high performer to an average performer, let's move them closer to that high performer status. And sometimes it's a simple discussion. How does somebody handle phone calls? How do they handle recommended services? sales drivers, if you will, through the NAPRA program? How well were those facilitated by a service writer? The ones that are actively engaged, you're going to see that in that report. The ones that aren't, that's your focal point. Now, how you go about that is certainly up to you. So reporting is a huge part of test and measure. If we don't have a way to make sure that the accuracy of the report is there, we might as well be spinning our wheels. Like you said, burn and turn. Far too many shop operations see car count. I hear that so many times over. Car count's down, car count's down. I need more car count. And I ask so many times over, are you making the most of what you already have? Because there's some valid information in slowing down to speed up. Slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And if we don't have a service writer that's able to constructively look at their performance, and we don't have an owner that's willing to either look at those reports or have a operations manager do that for them, we're just going to keep doing that same circle. We're going to have the same fights over and over.
You got to have car count. That's the only way you can gain an opportunity to have a sale and or make a profit. But yeah, some people, there's car count philosophies that are out there. And I think some of the most successful shops have learned how to blend all of that together. One of the things that Ben and I spoke about a while back as we were prepping for the show, and by the way, thank you so much. This has been great, great stuff. I want to tease about a couple of episodes that we plan to do in the future. And we want to do a little bit of a series on linear quantity opportunities. Now, I'm sure half of my audience is saying, what the hell is that? And so I do want to tease the audience about this. And so give us a couple of minutes on it.
Oh, absolutely. The linear quantity opportunities, as I so affectionately have referred to that, is in specific regards to parts matrix. Many of us across the industry, and you might even have the old ratchet and wrench, you know, 6 or 7 tier labor matrix. Well, the linear quantity opportunities in a nutshell is going to address the two biggest problems with a traditional matrix and then discuss the two biggest opportunities we have with a linear style design. One, the service writer constantly changing the price on a work order. That's an old school traditional trick that happens because of the large jumps in those levels of that matrix. The other is the opportunity to make changes to the matrix without putting a big old inflatable gorilla on top of the building that says, hey, we just changed our prices. It gives the service writer even more reason to change the price, and it gives customer reason for concern. It stands out very quickly. In a linear quantity opportunity type of mindset, we're looking to prevent the service writer, one, from needing to even change the price, and two, to not raise awareness of the customer of potential pricing strategy. And it works like a Sherman tank. There's no secret to it. It's very simple. We look at it more like an Evel Knievel landing ramp. We start with a high GP at the top end of the matrix down at the lowest cost items. And then we work our way down to a low GP at the higher cost items. But in that progression, we have a slow but steady movement that's going to prevent the service writer's need to adjust the prices. And then we look at the individual levels based on the quantity sold to modify those levels only. So now we are individually with laser precision making changes that don't stand out as if we raised our prices a banner on top of the building. Very solid strategy.
Perfect. All right. Stand by because we're going to do some episodes on this. It sounds brilliant. I think most of us appreciate what those pricing matrices are, but sounds like you have taken it to a completely new level in your thinking, thought, and of course, the results that come from it. Thank you so much. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listener did. And thank you so much to our listener for always tuning in. You can see this on my YouTube channel and any of your podcast favorite listening apps. Any final words, Ben?
I'd say if you don't have a commitment to lifelong learning, that's going to be that the initial key that that's going to drive you through the process of growing in your shop management, your overall shop strategy. The success results speak for themselves. That commitment to lifelong learning is the key.
Being a perpetual student, like I always say, Ben Dexter, National Training Manager, NapaTrax. You've probably seen him on training if you're a NapaTrax customer. Thank you so much, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.